Good morning. I'm calling the Senate Education Committee to order at 8:05 a.m. Today is Friday, April 7th, and this morning we have present Senator Stevens, Senator Coghill, Senator Giesel, and Senator Begich, myself, Chair Hughes. Please remember your cell phone etiquette. Thank you to those helping us. Today we will have a hearing on the three bills sponsored by the Senate Finance Committee, SB 102, SB 103, and SB 104. Let me just, actually, I'll say the titles of those. SB 102, Internet for Schools Funding. SB 103, Education Grants Scholarship Innovative Education Fund. And SB 104, Education Curriculum. And if it is the will of the committee, I'd like to pass these bills out this morning. And then after that, we'll be hearing SB 99, Pre-Elementary Programs Funding, by Senator Begich. And so to begin, we'll start with SB 102. If the sponsor staff would like to come up and introduce herself, make a few remarks, and then we're going to ask Heidi with the department to talk about the fiscal notes for each of the bills, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator McKinnon, and she apologizes she can't be here. She is triple booked this morning. I would like to briefly restate the goals of this suite of bills, and then I will examine a few notes on SB 102. The goals of the suite of bills are to, one, prioritize K through 12 education as our constitutional responsibility. That includes prioritizing how we spend our limited funds. Number two, improve outcomes for Alaska students. And number three, provide for efficiency and streamlined deliveries of education processes and education procedures. Alaskan students and outcomes are not where they should be for our students to be prepared for life after high school. Alaska students deserve a 21st century education. And Madam Chair, I do have a few comments for each bill, but I will strictly address 102 right now.
Okay, thank you.
With your permission.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To address some of the committee's and public comments concerns, Senate Bill 102, according to the Alaska Telephone Association, bandwidth can be prioritized within a network. Each provider can control the traffic as schools request it in their contracts. All schools in Alaska are currently able to go up to 25 megabits per second, even those using satellite. An increased internet capability can help resolve latency and buffering issues, depending on how many people and or classrooms use it at once. And the Alaska Telephone Association did provide a letter of support addressing all of those concerns that I did send to the committee, but if you don't have it, I'm happy to pass it out. And lastly, I wanted to clear up that this bill will not require any new infrastructure. That is why we chose 25 megabits per second. We do not have the funds to establish new infrastructure. And this bill does not pay for anything other than internet services. It does not pay for infrastructure, microphones, personal computers, laptops, software, etc. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I just want to let members know that that Alaska telephone letter will be sent distributed later today. Are there any questions for Brittany? Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. And if the department could please.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Senator Stevens.
I usually said 102, but we're dealing with all three now.
Right, right.
I do have a question to ask.
About 102?
And 103.
Oh, no, she'll come back up when we come to 103. I'm sorry to not be clear about that. So if the department could come up and speak to us about the fiscal note.
Good morning. Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services with the Department of Education. And before you today, there's one fiscal note for SB 102, and that's for our library operations component. Within this component, there is, in the FY18 appropriation requested, there's $34,000 in the services line, and that is for $30,000 of that is for increased for our increased E-rate contractor to, for the extra time needed to approve these applications is going to take more time, as well as some technical assistance funding in there. And then there's $4,000 for the reg changes that are necessary to make statutes and regs in alignment. And then 16,000 is what, $16 million is what's estimated in the grants line to bring the approximately 197 schools up to 25 megabits.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions? Senator Begich.
And just to confirm, Heidi, that grants line, that it's coming from the DGF, is the changing name higher education
Through the chair, that is correct. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Other questions? Anything more you want to add? State your name, please.
Patience Fredrickson, Director of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. We've been running the School Broadband Assistance Grant Program for 3 years. We have the capacity to add, I think it's about 64 more schools than we're currently serving with the school bag program. And if this passes, we will, of course, administrate it to the best of our ability.
Thank you very much for that. Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How many schools would be served by this? You said you have the ability to serve about 64.
Through the chair, Senator Begich. The current school bag program that serves 10 megabits per second, the schools that need to get up to 10 megabits, we have about 133 or so schools that are receiving service right now. The list that Ms. Hutchinson provided stated that there would be 197 schools that would need support to get to 10 megabits, so it's about a 64-school bump in the number of schools served.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And now we'll call Brittany back up. Oh, no, we won't call her back up yet. Senator Coghill, are there any more comments or questions of the committee?
I have a comment about the bill, if I may.
Okay. Senator Begich.
I'm going to support passing this bill out today, Madam Chair, and I just want to put on the record that I still disagree with the funding source for the bill, and I'm concerned that we didn't have time to vet the bill longer than just 3 days. But that said, this is a concept that you have talked about throughout the entire session, and we as a committee, as well as the committee with the other body, have talked about. I know that this is a necessary thing that we should be doing, and I want to say that on the record I support that concept. So,
thank you, Senator Begich. Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I think this is a good solution-based process, so I would move that we move Senate Bill 102 from House from the Senate Education Committee as the version A of Senate Bill 102 with the attached fiscal note.
Thank you. And seeing no objections, the bill passes from committee. And now I will invite the sponsor's staff for SB 103 to come to the table, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator McKinnon. With permission of the chair, I would like to briefly go over some comments made by public testimony on 103.
Please proceed.
Thank you. According to the Alaska Performance Scholarship Outcomes Report from 2011 through 2016, since 2012, the inception of the APS, 8,606 students have received $48,840,606 in scholarships over the last 5 to 6 years. It is time to reprioritize our spending on K-12 education to better prepare our 130,000 students for life after high school. Our money is best served where it is constitutionally mandated. According to the University of Alaska Fiscal Year 18 Budget Overview, out of 100 average Alaska ninth graders, 29 won't graduate from high school. 40 won't attend college, 16 go out of state, 10 attend the University of Alaska but are not graduated within 6 years, and 5 graduate from the university within 6 years. These are not positive outcomes. According to the University of Alaska Information Systems, since the APS's inception in about 2012, remediation rates were at 53%. They went down to 48% in 2014, and now they are back up to 52%. This 1% decrease over the life of the Alaska Performance Scholarship has not significantly improved the graduation preparation of our students. Also, from the same source, since the Alaska Performance Scholarship's inception in 2012, the number of Alaska high school seniors entering the university as freshmen has decreased every year since the inception of the APS. It started in 2012 with 2,371 Alaska freshmen and is currently at 2,079 for 2016. The Alaska Performance Scholarship has not increased the amount of Alaska freshmen students attending the university. And again, according to the University of Alaska Information Systems, 25% of Alaska Performance Scholarship recipients are also University of Alaska Scholars Program recipients. So there is some overlap, and getting rid of the APS is not as detrimental as has been portrayed. Students will have options to go to college still. There's state loans, federal grants, University Honor Scholar Program, and multitudes of local and national scholarships available. Students are still encouraged to take the 4 units of math, science, language, and history, as this will benefit them wherever they go. And that is the end of my comments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Are there comments? Senator Stevens.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I support this bill. I think it's a necessity because of the financial condition we're in. But I have some concerns about doing away with the scholarship program. It was a good idea when we had it. It's still a good idea to increase the number of students. I think we've heard from the districts that the higher graduation rate, certainly we know that it's had an impact on the university, the number of students going to the university. I think it did move the needle. And I do believe from 2011 that it's just not enough time to really know how this program was going to work. And I also have to take exception with people that say they're always so concerned about college graduation. That's important, but I believe some college is better than no college. So even a kid who gets a year or two, it's moving them up. It's helping them along. So I'm going to support this, but I guess my question is it possible to cut the money but leave the program in place so that if we do come into a position where we have some funds we want to put into scholarships, that we can reinstate this program pretty readily? We spent 2 or more years working on this legislation to do the scholarship. So that's my question. Is it possible to leave the program in place but cut the money? Not to give scholarships, but to have this available in the future if we need it, if we can afford it.
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, thank you for the question. It is possible. In statute, it currently says that scholarships shall be paid out with appropriation from the legislature. So it is possible to do that. It is a policy call that is up to this committee.
Thank you. Follow-up, Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, I'm not suggesting that we change the wording of the bill right now. I'm just encouraging us as things move along in the legislature, in the Senate, and in the House, that we have this as a consideration to keep the scholarship program in place and not fund it.
Thank you for that comment. I have had that same question, so I appreciate you asking. I'm sure it's something Senate Finance will consider. Is there anything else? Senator Giesel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to be supporting the bill also. You know, my concern, even at the time we passed this, was that it was dipping too low. That is to say, scholarships for a C student, what kind of results would we actually see? I appreciate the data that has been shared from the university, the fact that the number of freshmen entering the university have decreased every year. That is certainly not the direction we intended, that the remediation rate hasn't changed. I kind of wonder if that's because the scholarship went, it's a derogatory term, so low. I don't mean it that way, but, you know, scholarships are typically for your top-performing kids. It was new information to me that 25% of those students are also the other presidential scholar.
Through the chair, Senator DeGiesel, University Honors Scholar Program.
Thank you, the Honors Program. And I kind of wondered if that wasn't going to be a crossover there. That's a great program that the university supports and is actually their program. Top 10%, I believe, of the graduating students. I believe it's tuition for 2 years. Brittany, do you know how much the tuition, what the scholarship is?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, I would be guessing, I thought it was for 4 years for the top 10%, but I am not sure. I would be happy to get back to you on that.
Thank you. Whether it was two or four, regardless, we're already targeting those top kids. So I do support the bill. It's a tough decision because we did work hard to establish this. But we are in financial times that dictate we have to delete the program. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Brittany.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to point out that following, as Senator Stevens said, this has not been established long enough to be able to follow this long enough statistics. And so that 25% of overlap is just for this school year. Or I'm sorry, the 2015-2016 school year, that 25% overlap. We do not have numbers that go farther back than that. But hopefully if this keeps going, or the university scholar, I'm sorry, it's actually called the University Scholars Program. So we only have 1 year of data that talks about the overlap, just for clarification.
Okay, thank you. There are other comments? Senator Begich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have the same concern with the process of a very complex bill and very complex decisions being done in just a few days. And there's time. You mentioned, Brittany, reprioritizing our funding, and that's what this does. There really seem to be two concepts in this bill. One concept is the debate over whether or not the scholarships are working and not working and the desire to stop spending them. And I would share Senator Stevens' comment that at the very least, if it's not working but we can't do it, then suspend the program like we did the school debt reimbursement or other program, leave it on the books, and let us revisit or come back to the program and determine whether or not we want to do it if we do have a need to do this. We do sunset clauses, we do suspension clauses in this body all the time. I think that might be a more reasonable way to at least approach this and think about the impact. All the public testimony, bar one letter I got, all the public testimony that dealt with this section and this bill and that portion of the bill opposed eliminating the grants. And so I would really caution a rash elimination of a statute that took years to craft and just ensure that we're doing what we intend to do there. But there's a second part to this bill, and that's the grants program, which is the laudable goal of wanting to encourage people to do innovation. But you can't talk about the grants program without also talking about other reductions, because it's a voluntary grants program. You don't have to do the grants program, but there's virtually no district in the state that could afford not to do the grants program. And the grants program has specific boundaries and specific things that it declares that need to be done. What that essentially does is it directs districts based on the policy of this body to do specific kinds of programming, as opposed to allowing those programs to be developed by the local communities on their own. It really forces them into four categorical areas, the 1, 2, 3, and the 4 on page 1 and page 2 of the bill. I say that, and that's probably why I'm going to oppose this bill at this time. I think that it's also premature. We have the Alaska Challenge process that's underway. We've all spoken about it. If this bill isn't passed this session, then we have the opportunity to ensure that it does exactly what we intend it to do. We have a chance to see how the budgets will break out, and that will really determine whether this is or isn't a voluntary program. But based on the actions of our body so far, I think it's going to force people to compete and create a difficult environment in that competition. One last thought, and I know you were ready to answer a question or make a comment, but I recognize that number four in that is that the commissioner will establish certain innovative programs. I'm not sure if the staff capacity can do that. The last point I want to make about that is just when it comes to the monetary amount, if I look at the fiscal note correctly on the broadband bill, that's $90 million that's identified coming out of that $349 million that we've identified over the next 5 years. That's what the fiscal note says. It's $16 million per year, each of the subsequent years. This doesn't have a fiscal note saying how much money will be spent. And I am very concerned about passing out a bill that doesn't indicate clearly the expected amount or the known amount that would be provided, because there's only $349 million in this account. And in the end, that money's gone. And And so we'll have had these districts working with less money, chasing these grants, which hopefully create innovation, but may not. We know it takes years to do that. But all that said, I want to commend your boss and your committee and you for at least pushing an innovative idea on the table here that I think over the summer and through the Alaska Education Challenge we can consider, develop, modify. It's going to go out of this committee, so we won't have the opportunity, but it'll be in finance where I'm certain that opportunity will occur. So with that said, I'll be opposing the bill, but I'm certainly not going to try to hold it up today.
Thank you, Senator Begich. Brittany, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to respond to three things, respectfully. The fiscal note for Senate Bill 102 of the $16 million repeating itself, we would like to mention that the goal is to eventually fade it down, because when it was first established, I think in 2014 under HB 278, it was granted $4.9 million for the bag of grants, and now it's at, I think, $2.7 million. So over the last 3 years, it has decreased every year. So the goal and the thought is that this $16 million will slowly decrease as Internet services become cheaper and more expanded. And so the goal is for that fiscal note to increase every year. And the fund itself, depending on how fast we withdraw from it, it is invested at 7% annually. So hopefully it will grow and won't be drowned too quickly. And lastly, on your comment with the grants, what is in this bill are simply guidelines or suggestions, but the legislature will not have any say in what kinds of grants are approved. That is up to the Commissioner of Education. And it will have to be put in his budget, in the commissioner's budget, sent to the governor. The governor will have to approve, and then we'll have to approve of the funds. But as far as the grant itself goes, that is strictly approved of by the commissioner and what the commissioner deems is necessary and appropriate for innovation. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And other question for Brittany, we'll have the department come up and then on SB 103 and speak to the fiscal notes.
Good morning again. Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services with the Department of Education. There are three fiscal notes in front of you today for SB 103. Mr. Pressing and I will speak to the first one, and then I'm going to have Executive Director Butler come up and speak to the final two. The first one is within the student and school achievement component. There are within this, in order to implement the Alaska Education Innovative Grant Program, due to our staff capacity, we were requesting two permanent full-time positions, one program manager and an associate to assist with that program. And then, in addition, there are, so that's $209,400 within the personal services line. And then within the services line, there's $23,200. And in there are $19,200 for our department chargebacks. For each position, for both of those positions, and then there's $4,000 for the legal services needed to implement the regulations for this innovative program.
Okay, thank you. Do you have further comments, Mr. Pressing?
This is Paul Pressing, Acting Director for the Division of Student Learning. I have nothing to add. I'm here for questions if you have any.
There are questions, committee members. Okay, seeing none, thank you very much. Now, that's not the only fiscal note, right?
And I'll bring Executive Director Butler to come speak to the next two.
Okay.
Good morning. For the record, Stephanie Butler, Executive Director from the Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The first fiscal note is relative to the APS, and the numbers here are shown as decreases from the FY18 appropriation from the HEAF for the Alaska Performance Scholarship. It is an estimate. What we've done here is taken the percents that we know from our historical information relative to the distribution between the three levels of award, relative to the percent each year that typically receives an award, and relative to the decrease over time in the numbers of students who persist and continue to get awards. So we've applied those historical percents here to come up with this estimate. What we don't know, of course, is how they might change due to the phase out. So this is our best best estimate relative to the APS. The second fiscal note is relative to the Alaska Education Grant, and it is also shown as decreases each year from the FY18 appropriation. And as you are aware, there's a statutory formula that the amount available for the Alaska Education Grant is equal to half of the amount that's made available for the APS each year. So this is simply a formulaic reduction. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that I may.
Members have questions. All right, thank you very much. All right, Senator, are there any other further comments?
Madam Chair, if I may make a comment.
Senator Coghill.
First of all, and I want to thank the sponsor of the bill. It's just an indication of in the time when there's just less money because of our dependence upon the oil price, you have to make some tough choices, and I see this as one of the tougher choices. And but it's a prioritization, and it looks like trying to increase between bandwidth and innovation, it looks like it, just from what I hear the sponsors say and what I've read here, that it uses the money more broadly to lift more people up. Probably I'm going to share some concerns, and I would only say this to the sponsor, that I think the top tier, and what I don't understand is the nexus between other grants and the top tier here, but my druthers would be that the top tier be stay in this program, in the scholarship program. I don't know that I can make the good case for it at this point, and so I've looked as much as I can, given the circumstances of the last couple of days, dealing with a flood of information coming our way from every direction. But I would only ask the sponsor to keep that in mind, because I think from what I see from the fiscal notes and what I understand from what we're doing here, there might be room enough to do both. I just don't know the answer to that. So I would only ask the sponsor to do that. But I'm going to support the bill going out. I think given the circumstances of our budget cycle and the pain that we went through yesterday as we debated it, just showing that it's a tough discussion. And we need to see where every dollar has the best benefit to the broadest group of people we can. I think this is probably one way to look at it. So I'm going to support it going up to the Finance Committee with that concern. With that, Madam Chair, I'd like to move.
Well, before you do, I'm going to see if anyone else has any final comments. Anyone else? And I actually have some final comments, too, because this is a tough one. And I'm a super advocate for students to go on beyond high school, because I think it's really important, whatever kind of, whether it's college education or vocational education, it's just so valuable in allowing them to be productive citizens. And as it's already been stated, we are in a differing fiscal times than when this program was first established. And if you look at the Constitution and you read it, our core function, it's very specific regarding K-12 public schools. There's two verbs, establish and maintain. When it comes to university, the Constitution establishes the university, but there's no requirement, actually, for us to maintain. Now we have done it, and this, of course, feeds into the university and helps students. But our obligation is actually to children, and the word children is used. And so that's where why this tough decision is before us. But my goal and hope is that I think you used the word lifting up, at the K-12 level, we'll have students that will graduate and be more ready and to be more eligible for a whole myriad of grants and scholarships that are out there beyond what maybe the state could offer. So although it's been a great program and it's helped a lot of families and it's helped a lot of students, we have to return to our core function at this time. So I am going to support the bill. I will say that if it is reinstated at any point, I do think that we should probably bring up the bar. I think that's motivate the students even more. And I also would not be opposed to the statute staying on the books at some time that we might desire to do that. So, are there any objections to moving the bill out of committee?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I can make the motion.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, you need to make it first.
Just the rules of the day require that we move Senate Bill 103, version O, that's Oscar, with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Object.
All right. And seeing, would you like to speak to your objection, or you feel like you have stated it already? Or?
I think I've spoken to my objection, but I will add one thing, if I may, Madam
Yes.
Chair. Just that I think you're right that the real key is preparing children so that they can actually get to college. I think that's true, and I appreciate your comments about considering more rigor. I did receive from a former department employee one of that employee's criticisms of the program was it didn't have the rigor that was originally intended by the Senate and the House when they passed the bill many years ago, and it was his hope that in the future, if it is reinstated, it would have rigor attached to it.
Thank you for those comments, and Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm going to support this, but I did appreciate Senator Coghill's comment about lifting more people up. I think that's a wonderful concept, and if that is the case, then I certainly do support it. But I also have to speak up for the average student. I mean, we're always talking about the exceptional student. Having been a professor for 25 years, I always love the exceptional students. They were wonderful. But I got to say, it's often the average students who really accomplish things in life. We can't forget them just because they don't score high in high school. They can go on to do wonderful things. I suspect many of us were probably average students in high school and found our way in life and became maybe great students in college, but maybe not started out that way. I'd hate to have you see my transcript from my freshman year, but still, it led me to get a PhD. And I think that the average student can be just as valuable as the superior student.
Thank you for those comments. Senator Begich?
I have to say this. I graduated in the top 25 of my class, but there were only 25 in the class. So it's always been my excuse.
And I will just say I appreciate the comments about the rigor, and I want to put on the record, I know we heard from a number of the districts the rigorous courses really motivated the students, and I would just plea with the districts to continue those offerings and encourage and find other ways to motivate your students to continue to go that path. And there are a lot of other scholarships and grants and things that require that level of rigor. So I hope that doesn't diminish at the high school. So are there any further comments? Senator Giesel.
Well, Madam Chair,
we're talking
we also
today.
Have this remediation issue. So I am supporting the bill because I see this as taking our scant resources, our scant fiscal resources, and driving them down to that K through 12 level. My particular interest is the K through 3 level, where they're going to learn to read. We have a couple pieces of legislation that we heard last week, Madam Chair, that talk about our lack of reading at grade level, at third grade. And as one of the testifiers said, if you can read, you can learn anything. And it was a woman from Bethel that called in. And so the scholarship program is great, but at this time, we need to drive that money down to that lower level for basic skills. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Giesel. Yeah, I don't see any other comments. So would the clerk please call the roll?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator
Begich? No.
Senator Coghill?
Yes.
Chair Heater?
Yes. So with four yeas and one nay, SB 103 passes from committee, and we will take an at ease this time to sign the document. We're back on the record, and we're ready to move on to SB 104. So, Brittany, come on up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With your permission, I would like to just briefly cover some of the concerns on public testimony on SB 104 and then make a few closing remarks on all three.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Senate Bill 104 is completely voluntary for school districts. The state plans to pay for the fiscal note and additional staff if needed for the curriculum research and professional development. This will not come out of the Department of Education's funding or school district funding. It will come out of the Alaska Education Innovation Grant Fund. This bill does not want to touch, nor does it touch, local control. We simply want to provide a curriculum that is the best in math and English to our students in schools that don't have the necessary resources to come up with their own best curriculum. We want the three-year reprieve from curriculum review to be helpful to the Commissioner of Education in implementing the Alaska Education Challenge. We believe that the Commissioner of Education's heart is truly in education, and he truly cares about the well-being of our kids and their success. We want to help him with his Alaska Education Challenge and hope that this three-year reprieve will provide him time to work with districts in whatever capacity he needs. He knows as well as we do that local involvement is critical to educational success for our students, and we support him in his outreach. In summary, Madam Chair, these three bills are not meant to make up for the difference in the BSA. They are not tied to the one-time BSA reduction at all. In a nutshell, this suite of three bills that are being proposed should provide funding and cost savings to school districts as we work to make sure that our students can compete both nationally and internationally. This proposal will provide a funding stream to bridge the achievement gap by bringing students, curriculum, and instruction in line with the 21st century technologies. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions or comments from committee members?
I do just have a question.
Senator Bickich.
Brittany, if I may, what was the impetus for the bill? I understand the concept, but why? It almost seems like an answer to a question that wasn't being asked. So why this bill? Why now? The school districts had testified, many of them testified that they weren't going to stop their process, that that the bill would have no impact on them. So why are we doing this?
Through the chair, Senator Bickich, I do know that Senator McKinnon a couple years ago wrote a letter to the Board of Education asking why we don't have a I actually wasn't working for her at the time, so I do not know exactly what the letter said, but it talked about a curriculum that all schools can adopt, a common curriculum that will help students and school districts. I do know that this bill has been, we've received phone calls from school districts that this bill will help them, especially in smaller schools that don't have the resources, as I believe Ms. Skiles Parody mentioned that some superintendents in smaller schools are the fiscal person, they're they're everything, and they're the curriculum person. So this will help them in particular. But also, we believe that English and math are two of the primary concerns for education, and that if we can establish a best curriculum that's able to be adopted for all schools, then we will be able to help bring more students up by that curriculum.
You follow?
Senator Bickich.
That's a very persuasive answer.
Through the chair, thank you.
Senator Stevens.
Madam Chair, we'll be hearing from the department on the implementation. We have that opportunity.
If they're prepared to do that, we could do that as part of the fiscal note. Do you have another question you want to ask, Brittany? I actually have something, and it's from the fiscal note, but then the department can speak to it as well. And just because I just need clarification, because it's saying on the fiscal note that DEED must purchase curriculum for the 7 test districts as well as make approved curricula available to all districts. So is that in the legislation that the department is purchasing that and then providing it? Because I knew that they were doing the review, but they're actually purchasing and providing. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Hughes, that is and is not correct. The department will purchase it, but it will be out of state funds, out of the Alaska Higher Education Innovation Fund. We do not want to take any more funds from the Department of Education or from school districts to purchase this curriculum. So it will be paid for out of the new fund. But yes, their curriculum will have to be purchased and the research will have to be paid for. And does that answer your question?
Well, and then once they purchase it and review it, then they're actually buying the quantities that the different districts need. And and they're covering that cost as well?
Madam Chair, I do believe yes, but I'm not 100% certain. I will have to get back to you on that. I apologize.
And perhaps the district will know, because that seems like it could be a tremendous cost savings to a district, and I don't think that was clear before. So that's an important piece of information, and some of the districts might be a little bit more interested if that's the case. Senator Begich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It prompts the question, what if the Alaska Innovation Fund doesn't pass? Where does the funding come if this bill does pass?
Through the chair, Senator Begich, if the Higher Innovation Grant Fund bill does not pass, it would come out of the Alaska Higher Education Fund.
Okay, thank you. All right, seeing no other questions, we'll have the department come forward, please, and speak to the fiscal note and this. But before that, Senator Stevens, once they get situation, come on up. You can restate your question for the department before they go over the fiscal note.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think you pretty much have stated it. I just want to know how the department is going to implement this program, how it's going to work, what the costs are going to be, and how you're going to be implementing it is really the question.
Through the chair, Senator. This is Paul Preston with the Alaska Department of Education, Acting Director for Division of Student Learning. Through the chair, Senator Stevens, this would be very challenging for the department to implement. That is the reason why it's an indeterminate fiscal note is that it would be a massive effort for us, to be honest. We don't have the content specialist, so we'd need additional staff, at least a math, language arts person. The testing of the curriculum that's required in this bill would be pretty extensive as well. As you know, when you test curriculum, you have to have a control group, so you have to have schools that have similar demographics. You know, one's implementing, one's not. And just the overall cost, the research that I've been looking at, and it was a three-district comparison, that just a math class, a math curriculum in high school, averaged about $328 per student. So if we're talking about the five largest districts in the state, which are, of course, Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, Mat-Su, and Kenai, makes up 72% of our student population, if you take just that low number of 328 and times it by the student population of 93,000, you get a $30 million fiscal note right there. And that's just a guess. That's why it was indeterminate. I think the reviewing would be pretty extensive. The testing would be, if you really wanted to have the rigor and scientific and the research to support it, you would have to have a pretty thorough testing. And my previous experience was with the Reading First grant. It was a K-3 reading program, and districts had adopted a reading program. And we really found out after about 3 years of constant professional development, it was when we really saw the fidelity of that curriculum being upheld by all the teachers. And then after the 3 years, we realized that no one curriculum hits all the kids. You know, you have English language learners, special education, for example. So then we had to do the research on supplemental programs, what programs would help those unique populations. And those were actually different from school to school to school. So there wasn't just one supplemental program that could fit all the schools because of the different populations within the school. And so that's why the fiscal note is indeterminate.
Senator Giesel.
Well, you know, I appreciate the description of testing the curriculum and needing a control group and similar populations, the demographics, etc. How does an individual school district choose a curriculum then?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, really the teachers who know the kids look at, you know, how they're doing their instructions, really. What are their curriculum maps, for example? So, you know, you have the fifth graders are talking to the fourth grade teachers, and they're saying, okay, this is what we're seeing those fourth graders coming into us, we need to beef up their skills in a certain area, for example. So really, I think it puts that those teachers in the building who know those kids, you know, they know their profession and they know which materials and curriculum work for them. Now, districts, as Superintendent McManus mentioned yesterday, Alaska Gateway, I think, you know, there is a lot of talking amongst the districts. I mean, they you know, superintendents, principals, teachers, they talk and share what they know works with their kids, especially within the district. So,
were you able to look at, have any other states taken this on, and were you able to ascertain from how they did it and the costs and what it might all involve? It does sound very complicated.
Chair Hughes, the 3 days of research I was able to pull together, and I did talk with Education Northwest, it's our regional lab, and see if they had any researchers that support it or that could clarify, and I wasn't able to really find a whole lot of research. There's, you know, there's some states like Texas has done some stuff like this, California, I believe Massachusetts, with varying degrees of success.
Okay, thank you for that. Senator Coghill.
Well, that was good information you gave us. So help me understand, as we're going into the early parts of the 21st century, I know that printing curriculum and distributors who owned the copyrights, the different curriculum books, generally made some pretty good pitches to both the state and districts. And so there's that kind of pressure, as well as what you're talking about, and that's the kind of the scientific what value do we get from them. What is changing because of cyber education? Is that changing that dynamic of that downward pressure from publishers?
To the chair, Senator Coghill, another excellent question. That's what makes this difficult to kind of wrap my brain around as far as the fiscal note, because there's some districts that aren't even buying textbooks anymore. They're just downloading on their iPads. And so that cost is significantly different if you're not printing and buying actual consumables. So I think the districts are really driving the demand. I mean, I think, you know, Texas, for a while there, it was said that Texas drove all the curriculum in the United States because it was the largest. So where Texas went, all the other curriculum just followed. I don't think you're seeing that as much now, because there's a real market for, I think, states and their unique needs. For example, we have the largest UPIC speaking population in the country. So we have unique needs, and I think vendors are more willing to react and adjust to individual states. At least that's what I feel like I'm seeing.
Thank you. All right, you want to go, Heidi, go over the specifics of the fiscal note?
Yes, for the record, Heidi Teschner, Director of Administrative Services with the department. Other than it being really undeterminate because of how much curriculum and what that will actually cost, Mr. Pressing said, that there would be a need for staff. So we're like, if we were to put a note to this, three positions total, two contents specialists, one in math and one in language arts, and then a support staff for logistics and support, and to help them implement the work around this and develop the regulations that the state board will need to adopt.
And then if you could speak to my question earlier to Brittany as far as purchasing and then providing it to districts, are you actually providing the actual, you know, whether it's software or books to districts, or are you just making, you know, saying this one's approved and then it's up to the districts to make the purchase?
Through the Chair Hughes, again, Paul Pressing. The way I read the bill is that the state would be providing this curriculum to anyone that would, any district in the state that would like it. So that could be expensive, because, as I just mentioned, some districts might have downloads and some districts might want the textbooks. So it would be a significant amount of funding, in my opinion.
Okay, thank you. That is Senator Coghill.
Just in that we're asking for a template, but there's is there anything unusual in what we're asking that had not been done by the department prior to when we, because we did some curriculum before, there must be some curricular requirements that are pretty similar to this. Is there anything unusual that that you find in this?
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, the department has provided resources back around 2005, 2006 under Commissioner Sampson. We had the K-12 lesson plans, 180-day lesson plans for each grade. That project, we had it available online that teachers could just go in and download a lesson plan for if they're a first grade teacher, they could pick up the whole 180-day scope. It wasn't used very much, and I don't think it's on the department's website anymore.
I just wanted to know, because I remember there was some of that, including there was some Alaska history curricula available. There was a variety of different things that that I remember searching out, and I just wondered if what we're asking standard-wise, best practices, you know, conformity to other laws, if there's anything unusual in here. So if not, I think we can move forward. So thank you.
Thank you. I would think, just as you were describing how it's done at the local level where they know the students and superintendents and principals talk to each other, that what you're proposing is going to be much more evidence-based and research-intense. Do you think that that could actually perhaps ensure that for the districts that opt in that they're getting really going to get the best bang for their buck as far as what will meet the students' needs?
Yeah, Chair Hughes, that's another excellent question. I think, you know, with any implementation, that's if the department supports it and then there's still not any achievement, then what? Mm-hmm. You know, if we go through all this rigorous testing and there's still not a major gains, then what? And I think that's where the supplemental programs and the local knowledge of the kids really comes into effect. What we found with Reading First is that we had to really provide consistent professional development over at least 3 years before we started seeing results. And districts that have pretty substantial teacher turnover rate, that professional development had to be consistent every year and follow up. We had one visit a month, a week-long visit to each of the schools to ensure that that curriculum was being used and followed as intended. So that's my two cents.
Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just carrying on to that line of thought and the idea of the principle that I think is strong in this state of local control, I'm a little concerned if we are abrogating that local control in any way. The department will make curriculum available to all districts. The State Board of Education will be required to adopt standards for the approval of curricula and best practices. So you're adopting standards for the approval. Is this in any way changing that idea of local control?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, I believe it does. I believe that, you know, if the board, you know, what if the local community presents a curriculum that the board doesn't approve? I mean, that's taking away the local control. And the criteria would have to be, you know, as Senator Coghill mentioned, you know, there could be what if the board didn't approve a curriculum? I think, you know, when we, in Reading First, when we had a list of curriculum that they could use and vendors threatened to sue the state because they were on that list. So if a curriculum isn't approved, then what? I mean, it's could be very complicated.
For clarification on this, on what you just stated, it is optional, though, for a district. So a district could continue to do exactly what they're doing. Isn't that correct? Is that that was my understanding. So I don't think we're really taking away local control for a district that wants to retain that.
On page 1 in section 9, the board shall approve curricula used by the five largest districts. So, mm-hmm. Chair Hughes, that's correct. It would be the five largest districts that the board would be approving their curriculum, not the remaining 48 districts.
Senator Geisel.
Well, and the sentence continues, and two REAA areas selected by the board.
Okay. Good point. All right. Any other questions or comments for the department? And thank you very much. And Brittany, if you'd like to come up and make your closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, this is Brittany Hutchison, staff to Senator McKinnon. This bill, as said before, is completely voluntary. Local control is not being touched. It does not want to be touched. What Mr. Pressing was talking about in the first section is that the curriculum approval and review is only for the first 3 years. So for the first 3 years, we're going to adopt five of the largest school districts, which are already adopted. We're just going to say, okay, clean slate. Anyone who wants to use these already approved curriculum can use them for these 3 years if they want to change their curriculum. If they don't, they don't have to do any of it. But they also get a three-year break where they don't have to establish any new curriculum or any more approved curriculum. So what the first section does is it just says that there will be curriculum available if you do want to change, but you do not have to change for 3 years. And then when that 3 years is up and it's time for your six-year continual renewal, then you can use the curriculum adopted by the Board of Education or you can come up with your own. None of this is mandatory. None of this touches local control. We don't want to do that. It just provides a break for 3 years by allowing them to use the five largest school districts' curriculum and the two REAA's curriculum.
And so it seemed to indicate that perhaps that we, by the previous speaker, that we could be usurping the control of those five large school districts and two REAs, but we're actually, in statute, we're only giving the department the ability to approve. The board shall approve, so they cannot disapprove. Is that so? In other words, they're not going to gather the curriculum from the five districts and say, nope, we don't approve that. You can't use that anymore.
No, Madam Chair. No, what they're going to do is, since the top five and the REAAs that we are looking, or I'm sorry, the largest five and the two REAAs, since their curriculum is currently already approved, we're just going to approve it for three more years and make it available to everyone if they want to up their curriculum. So I hope I'm making myself clear. And I would also like to I would like to see how often curriculum is denied. I do believe it's a small percentage. I would like to see the statistics on that, but I don't know how often that actually happens.
Okay. I think that is clear. Is that clear to members? Do you have any questions? Senator Geisel.
Well, I guess that, Madam Chair, in that case, on page 1, line 9, I guess I would say the board shall approve curricula currently used by, because that wasn't clear before, that it's what's in place now. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. That would be a consideration you can pass on to Senator McKinnon. Thank you for that, Senator Geisel. Are there any other questions or comments? Thank you, Brittany.
Appreciate you.
Your work. It's been intense. I know you've done a good job. And at this time, Senator Coghill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With the understanding that currently is something that we're going to strongly encourage, I would move that we move the Senate Bill 104, version J, Juliet, from committee with the individual recommendations in the attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, SB 104 is passed out of the Senate Education Committee. And I want to, we are going to be moving on another bill, but before we do, I just want to make one comment. I am backing up, but as the chair, I can kind of exercise that a little bit because I wanted to say one thing about 103 that I forgot to say, and I will be speaking to the sponsor of the bill, the Innovative Education Innovative Grant Fund, get that right. Because of the way the bill is currently written, it will be quite the delay before it would actually get into the hands of the districts. I figure it would be FY 19 or 20. So I would ask, because of the other work we're doing in other bills and really trying to give the tools to the schools sooner rather than later, I would ask the sponsor to consider maybe carving out something that could become available sooner. So, and with that, we will end our discussion on that suite of three bills from the Senate Finance Committee. And Senator Begich, are you ready to go?
Yeah.
And we will take an at-ease while he gets ready and sign. Right, we're back on the record. Senator Begich, if you would give us the bill number and the title along with your name and proceed, I would appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tom Begich. I'm the State Senator for District J, downtown Anchorage. And the bill that is before you is Senate Bill number 99. This is an act relating to early education programs provided by school districts, relating to funding for early education programs, and relating to the duties of the State Board of Education Early Development. And I must say before I dive right into the sponsor statement that my broadband might be a little limited today. So I recognize also, Madam Chair, that you have to leave to chair, I think, Labor and Commerce Committee meeting. And so I'll try to be brief in my introductory comments.
Thank you.
As I think you've all heard from testimony, for commentary yesterday and from all throughout the process, that research from biologists, psychologists, economists, and others have all talked about the importance of quality early education. Earlier today, even in this committee, we discussed the importance of really focusing on the early years, kindergarten to third grade, and the readiness and the importance of being ready at early years so that we have a better chance of graduating. Kindergarten, pre-K and early education programs provide students an opportunity before they enter kindergarten to improve that school readiness, reading levels, long-term economic performance, and long-term studies such as the Perry Preschool Project also suggest students with access to high-quality preschool are less likely to be incarcerated and less likely to receive government assistance as adults. Alaska's current pre-kindergarten programs, such as those in Anchorage, Mat-Su, the Lower Kuskokwim School District, Nome, and frankly throughout the state, offer opportunities and quality that has been measured before and described before both our Subcommittee on Finance for Education and this committee. Early education programs in the state of Alaska include Head Start, Best Beginnings, Parents as Teachers, but more importantly, they include the work of the Department of Education Early Development and through our demonstration grants and the expiring Moore grants that are based on all the same concepts of high-quality early education to students, beginning with the lowest-performing districts. And that is precisely what this bill attempts to do, and you'll hear that in a moment. I'm going to move through this. There are commentaries I could make. They're in the sponsor statement. Pre-K could save up to $7 in long-term government expense by reducing the need for the remedial education, which has been a topic of this committee, and involvement with criminal justice and public assistance systems. But what I want to focus on is that smart investments in our oil and gas royalties and the PFD have made our state one of the most economically equitable in the country. It's time to make similar smart investments in our kids, with an eye towards raising the next generation of Alaskans so they can make a positive impact on the state. We all support these concepts. I recognize the situation that we're in, and I think this is an example of the analogy I gave yesterday in debate on the floor, that when you're really going to repair your home, it's very important first to do the research, do the investment, do that whole process, and maybe that costs a little money on the front end, but in the long run, it saves a lot of money. So with that, I have with me
my staff assistant, my chief of staff, Dr. Sydney Coffin, who will be happy to walk through sectional analysis when you're ready, Madam Chair.
Yes, we're ready, please.
For the record, Sydney Coffman, staff to Senator Begich. So if just beginning on page one, Section 1 establishes that elementary schools also include an early education program, whether operated within a public school or by an outside organization. Turning to Section 2, this establishes that a 4 or 5-year-old, that is a young 5-year-old who has not attended kindergarten, is eligible to attend a public school early education program. Section 3 is really the meat of the bill. In this section, we create a stair-step 3-year grant program to provide training and assist a school district in developing an early education program. In year one, the lowest performing 20% of school districts, as established in 2017, will be eligible for a grant to establish a district-wide, high-quality early education program. In year two, the next lowest performing 20% of school districts will be eligible for that 3-year grant program, again, to establish an early education program. At the end of each 3-year grant cycle, the Department of Education and Early Development, later referred to as the Department, will be responsible for determining if the district's early education program complies with state standards. The grants will be available to the next lowest 20% of school districts until all school districts are eligible to participate. So over those 5 years, each 20% will be eligible to participate or apply for those grants. Moving on to Section 4. This directs the department to supervise all early education program and approve of those early education programs created by the early education grant program described in Section 3. On Section 5, this defines an early education program as a pre-kindergarten school for students 3 through 5 years old if its primary function is educational. And I'll note that this bill is specifically targeted at 4-year-olds. However, there are some state and federal programs that include 3-year-olds. So 3-year-olds are not included in this program, but we want to make sure they're not going to be excluded as a result of changes made by this bill.
Senator Begich?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I might add, this is really conforming language, so it takes an existing piece of language in statute because we're redefining redefining pre-elementary in Section 1 into an early education program. This ensures that we're not unnecessarily adding people into that definition of what a elementary school program is. So it's really bill drafter wanted to be sure we didn't make an unintended consequence of putting 3-year-olds into an elementary school program. So this protects us from that.
Okay, so thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sure.
For the record again.
Oh, for the record, Sydney Coffman. In Section 6, this directs the board to adopt regulations regarding funding, as well as statewide and local goals for early education program. The regulations shall ensure that early education programs have the flexibility to be locally designed and culturally appropriate, so long as they meet early education standards. An early education program may be either full day, so that is 6 hours, or half day, which is at least 2 hours. Moving on to Section 7 on page 7, for funding purposes, an early education student shall be counted in the district's average daily membership as a half-day student once the early education program has been approved by the department. So that is meaning that after the early education program is approved, most likely after that 3-year grant cycle is completed, those 4-year-old students that are participating will be rolled into the ADM as half a student. Section 8 adds early education to consideration for determining the number of elementary schools in a district. Section 9 ensures that early education students who currently receive state or federal funding for early education are not included in the ADM for the purposes of funding. And the goal here is to just make sure that we're not double counting students. So if students are already in an existing federal or state stream of funding, they won't be rolled into the ADM. And Section 10 directs early education program staff to be included in those organizations required to report evidence of child abuse. And finally, Section 11 repeals the early education grant program in 10 years once all school districts have had the opportunity to apply. And I know this is one of Senator Begich's favorite sections of the bill.
You want to speak to that, Senator?
I do. I want to speak to Section 11 and just clarification on Section 9. What it says is that if you are receiving federal money now for your 4-year-old in a program,
that once you're approved as a program, you would have to stop receiving that federal money because you'd be getting ADM. So that way you're not double dipping on the kids. Section 11, the reason we're repealing it is every district in the state will have been offered the opportunity to join a voluntary preschool. And it is universal voluntary preschool based on a model that's been successful in Oklahoma. In Oklahoma, which is the highest state with the highest level of involvement in pre-K and one of the two states with the highest level of involvement, 70% of families take advantage of their voluntary universal pre-K. The average around the country is about 50%. Some states are significantly lower than that. I know that we've done a good job in this state of building quality preschool programs, and the long-term goal here is to create a sustainable, affordable, programmatic approach, the tiered approach, splitting the districts into five cohorts, allows us to do this in a slow, systemic way without breaking the bank. So that's basically the bill in a nutshell. I know we have a series of fiscal notes attached to the bill, and we do have the department here to comment on those fiscal notes.
Okay, I also want to mention that we have Kate Glover, the drafter, and Megan Johnson from THRED online. Do you know what THRED stands for? I know it's a...
I don't actually know
but
what
it is. But it's an early child education program of some sort. So if members have questions, I just want to let you know that they're available. So do we have questions from committee members? A lot to digest at this point. I do have a question as far as I understand when you have some of the in the areas where or in a home where there's not the parental support perhaps and often that sometimes is associated with poverty but not always. There are we've all heard inspiring stories about single mom working several jobs, struggling, and have raised amazing students. But we also know in homes that don't have those difficulties, those students often don't need the early, the 4 and 5 year old. In fact, my kids pretty much knew how to read when they went to kindergarten, and they just didn't need it. I was blessed to be able to be a stay-at-home mom. And so one of the things I'm curious about is the grants target the lowest performing schools initially, so maybe communities that maybe have more families that might struggle in that way. But then why would you expand it all the way across the board when you have, and I know it's voluntary, but if a student can be served in their home, this would be making it available to them when they might not have the need. Just your thinking behind that.
Madam Chair.
I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, you are making sense, Madam Chair. Tom Begich, State Senator for District J. The idea of first let me address the idea of starting with the lowest tier of districts. That actually follows on the Moore decision in Geisel, where we really do have a constitutional responsibility when we have access or knowledge of a process for education that works, we need to apply that process. So that's part of why we start with the lowest performing districts. But it also is important to recognize that educational opportunity needs to be offered to every child in the state of Alaska. And that also has been litigated in the state. It's also been litigated at the federal level and throughout states in the country. That's the equitable versus the adequacy argument. Every parent needs to be offered the opportunity. The beauty of this is if you choose to homeschool your parent, this is parental choice. You get to choose whether you go into pre-K or not. If you choose not to do that, if you feel comfortable with the environment in your home environment, which is what is clearly 30% of those in Oklahoma have done and 50% of those in other states have done, then you won't take advantage of the opportunity. But the those court decisions all go to the same point, which is the opportunity to learn. And so offering the opportunity to learn to all Alaskans is an equity issue as well as being an adequacy issue.
All right. I also wonder, is there anything in this bill that would prohibit, for instance, a tribal organization from offering this program and somehow being worked into it?
Superb question, Madam Chair, Senator Tom Begich from District J. No. In fact, it encourages it. And that's part of the reason for two of the sections in the bill. And one in particular, which is the ensuring the definition is retained between the, you know, for the purpose of an elementary school program, so it would necessarily not include those three-year-olds. And that's because we want to continue the collaboration with Head Starts that are both tribal and otherwise. The cultural component also encourages that, and the intent of the bill is to encourage continuing partnerships with existing entities.
All right. Are there other questions that members have? Senator Coghill.
So, first of all, thank you for a very thoughtful way of putting this forward. In just my first reading of it, I thought it's a pretty good idea. And I like the tiered in. Certainly getting the money is going to be the tougher thing. There's no doubt about it. And so it looks like you've created a granting system that starts reaching to the neediest first, which I'm grateful for. Probably the struggle I have, and I'm just going to ponder this, but I'm just going to say it out loud. First through third grade can and should be able to read, and we just don't do well enough, I think, in Alaska. And I don't know that the resource that we're going to do here really improves that. I would hope that it would, and I think that would be your aim as well. I just don't know that because I've watched youngsters come to school unprepared who get it the first year, many who don't. So I understand the dilemma that we're trying to answer here. But we've generally got these students for 12 years, and in many ways the system, however we want to describe the system, in my view, quite adequate. And yet many students come through that system unprepared the way we expect. And so I don't know that moving this down helps us. I think your aim is that it would. I get that. I'm not convinced yet. So, but I think families who cannot do this or will not do it, I understand why you want to reach down into this world generally supportive of that idea. But that's also true in the first through fifth grade for the most part. And so I'm going to be pondering this, but I appreciate the effort.
Senator Begich.
Madam Chair, through the chair, Senator Coghill, Tom Begich, District J, Senate District J. One of the handouts I've given, and I'll provide it in color so it's a little easier to see, did come from not just from the department, but from other testimony that's come before both the subcommittee on Senate Finance and on education, and as well as from general testimony. I did not enter this concept lightly. I've been pondering pre-K for about a decade now. I've been looking at all the research, and what I've been most struck by is the research in Alaska itself, which shows that where we have applied pre-K and where we can compare it, in particular, I look at the Lower Kuskokwim School District, the data from Nome, all of which is attached in the handout, and the MATSU and with Anchorage, so urban and rural areas, what we see is where you have provided quality pre-K, those kids do come. They do come ready to learn. We see achievement in just the first year of kindergarten from the beginning to the end has reached much, much higher levels. By third grade, we know this now in the Lower Kuskokwim School District, and by second grade in Nome, the outcomes for those kids who have been exposed to pre-K, voluntary pre-K, end up performing extremely better, much better, than those who did not get exposed to our pre-K, not Oklahoma's or Wisconsin's or Delaware's, Alaska's pre-K. And I think that's the critical piece here. We're looking at what we have done with 8 years, 9 years of demonstration grants, and we are building off the experience of that and saying we've done demonstration enough. Now it is time to stop arguing over $2 million every year for whether we're going to do demonstration grants and to start acting on what the demonstration has shown us. That pre-K does exactly what you're talking about, Senator Coghill, which is it produces the results that make kids ready to learn. Senator Giesel mentioned earlier today the importance of that K through 3 experience. It really does shape your future. That's when your brain synapses decide what's going to be kept and what's going to be discarded. Those are the critical years of learning, and if you're not prepared to learn during those years, you don't retain the knowledge in later years. So you've nailed it on the head. This is exactly what all the thought presses went through. We'll have lots of time to think about this bill, and I think you'll find at the end of the process that it goes exactly where you want it to go.
Just a follow-up comment, Madam Chair, and then I'll let it go. We've tried, like parents as teachers, in a variety of other ways to encourage parents to step up. Probably the struggle that there's a philosophical struggle that I enter into this with is when the state continually relieves families of responsibility, families continually release responsibility. And so that's the philosophical tug I have mm-hmm. when we do these things. So having it totally voluntary, I think, is absolutely important. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to put on the record, I struggle with that issue as well as where do we get the money to do this. So, but I think it's well thought out, and so I appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator Beckett.
Thank you, Senator Caulfield. Just one very brief follow-up to your follow-up, which is that originally when I had proposed the bill, I had proposed it alongside the change of the POMV, but I thought that was more appropriate to place an SB 96 and to work that. So I actually was thinking about how can we fund this thing at the time, but I recognize that concern, and I'm hopeful that after we finish this year and we have taken a hard look at our fiscal situation and how we approach that, that ideally the way we do these resources and how we do them will be identified. I recognize that problem.
Thank you. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I like what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying. I think you're right. I'm not sure you're right, but I think you're right. You know, we always talk about rigor in education. I don't know how rigor exactly fits in with 3-year-olds, but, you know, I think you've given a lot of latitude to locally designed, culturally appropriate. That could be pretty much anything, it seems to me. So I hope there's some substance in that, and there's some rigor in it as well. I guess my question would be, how do we know if it's working? How do we know if this program is successful? How do we know if this is money well spent?
Senator Stevens through the chair. Senator Begich. You know two ways, and then I may ask the department to also comment on their programming since that's our best tool here in Alaska. We know because the way that the bill is written, if you turn to page 7, there's a lot of underlined language there. These criteria that are set out from lines 2 to line 22, actually, with the exception of the adding of the culturally appropriate language and some minor modification of language to comport with Alaska, really are the tested methodology that was used, high-quality teachers that have certain types of programming that talks about the standards. This is the Oklahoma standard that has been tested and measured over years, number one. Number two, and more importantly, our own Alaska experience and the quality of the Alaska experience is what I would want us to apply to this particular legislation. That's why I've tied the department directly into writing the regulations, why we've discussed it. When I've discussed this with the department, I've suggested that we would use their models that have been showing quality outcomes. In the data, in the backup data that I provided, there is a series of child growth and developmental areas objectives charts. They're difficult to read in your copy. There's a darker and then a lighter and then another shade of gray, but they show improvements, and they're worth looking at, the domains of literacy, cognitive development, language, and mathematics. And they show dramatic increases as a result of, that's this document here.
You may not have it.
You may not have it? Oh,
don't have that.
I'm so sorry. We'll make sure that you do have a copy of it.
And we like color, too. Like
I will
like
get you color.
We'll
get you color. And then I mentioned the Lower Kuskokwim School District language achievements in pre-K and no pre-K. Those are in here. This is how we measure it. We'll be measuring against the standards we've actually created over 9 years here in the state of Alaska, not over 2 years, not over 3 years, but over 9 years of experience with these kinds of programming. And so I'm counting on that. We've also have strong language in the bill to ensure that the department retains jurisdiction over whether a program is continuing to meet its pre-K. Further, in the grants program, if after 3 years the department deems that you are not at a qualified level, you do not get approved. In fact, the bill allows for up to 2 more remedial years of work where they can intensely focus on a district to ensure that the district is meeting those quality standards.
just like the curriculum discussion you heard earlier today.
Senator Begich and Senator Stevens, we are at time, and once Senator Begich is going on the subject, he could go on for a while. However, and if members need to leave, please do that. I misunderstood and thought Megan Johnson was just on the phone for questions, but I understand she was supposed to be invited testimony. So, and I also found out my Labor and Commerce meeting is delayed till 9:45. So I am at this time going to invite Megan to speak to us, and as members need to leave, you can go. But I will tell you, just so you know, 8 o'clock, joint with the House, with the Alaska Council on School Administrators. And Megan, if you're online and can hear us, go ahead and state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Madam Chair Hughes, and the Senate Education Committee, and inviting me for this testimony. I'm Megan Johnson. I'm the director of Alaska's Quality Recognition and Improvement System called Learn and Grow, which is housed and managed at THRED, which is Alaska's Child Care Resource and Referral Network. So Learn and Grow provides a quality framework intended for all early care and learning programs. So that includes child care, Head Starts, and pre-Ks, to use as they engage through this continuous quality improvement process. I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 99 and the expansion of Alaska's pre-K system, and really specifically to talk to some of those quality standards and what quality looks like. High quality early childhood is a wise investment for our children, our families, our workforce, our future, and our current economy. I recognize that your jobs to sustain a strong economy for Alaska is challenging, but developing new sources of revenue and balance with being more efficient with current resources is difficult. However, I implore you to think about our future. The investment in our children and families is critical to Alaska's long-term sustainability, and children and families are our future and our current economy and future economy. There are approximately 40,000 children under the age of 6 in Alaska where both parents are in the workforce. Unfortunately, there's limited access to affordable, quality early childhood programs. Without accessible, affordable, and quality early childhood programs, families cannot go to work, and children do not have the opportunity to learn and practice the critical friendship skills, emotional regulation, problem solving that are necessary to prepare them for school. So a lot of what I heard you talking about is the reading and the math skills later. A lot of this quality practice has to do with the backbone of what's developmentally appropriate for this birth to kind of five age that is pretty critical. And a lot of that is emotional regulation. Parents play that primary role in supporting this development. But if they have to go to work, we need highly qualified early childhood teachers to partner with parents and nurture those young brains. So according to the most recent Early Care and Learning Economic Report conducted by the McDowell Group on behalf of Alaska's Early Childhood Coordinating Council and its partners, early care and learning contributes $2 billion to Alaska's economy each year as a result of access to quality early childhood. In the 2015 Early Childhood Learning Household Survey, 46% of parents with children under the age of 6 reported difficulty finding an affordable early childhood program, and it impacted their ability to go to work. So just imagine what it could be for Alaska's families, children, and our economy if we had enough affordable, high-quality choices. It isn't just about affordability, and the main reason for my testimony today is to really talk about that quality, what it is, what it looks like, why we need it, and how pre-K is and can be a high-quality service delivery choice for parents. So the quality of early childhood is what makes a difference if children are prepared for kindergarten in the workforce. We know from years of conclusive research in neuroscience that birth to six is the densest time of synaptic activity ever in a human's life. The quality of the relationships in these early years is what determines the children's ability to regulate their own emotions, to problem solve, be persistent, make friends, play with their and be resilient. All those soft skills that industries are now requiring, and I would say are the precursors to them being able to be ready to read, ready to do math, ready to expand their language. Several factors may influence that lack of positive or sometimes negative neural connections. And preparing perhaps keeping children more in their, what I might call, their feely or emotional part of their brain. And we really want to get children out of that and be in a place what we might call their cortex or executive functioning or their thinking part. And being in that thinking part of your brain is where you can learn to read and you can learn to do math. But unfortunately, in Alaska, the rate of abuse and neglect is often one of the highest, particularly for children under five. Many early educators often lack their own skills to be attuned to know how to nurture those relationships. And parents are busy, and they're stressed, and they're trying to make ends meet, and they're doing their best. If adults in a relationship, both parents and teachers, don't have their own positive experiences of secure relationships and attachment to draw on to support as they're working to build those relationships with their children, that can be very challenging. So what is, how can quality relationship be improved? So we know that through trauma-informed care and how this can increase protective factors and decrease children's ACE scores, you may have heard of the adverse childhood experiences. In quality, teachers know how to create learning environments to meet the individual needs of the children in their classroom. They are building relationships with families. They are decreasing stress. They are helping children be emotionally stable. They have specialized training and education in order to do this that is different than working with K-12 population. They are working in partnership with parents to get that social-emotional stability so they can be ready to read and do math and have rich vocabularies. And they know how to access the resources in their communities. This is quality. These are types of interactions that decrease the cost associated with special ed, grade retention, lower involvement in child protection, and the criminal justice. But unfortunately, right, without the right professional learning supports, it has been becoming increasingly more difficult for early childhood to know what to look at. We have a lot of trauma happening in schools, and that relationship learning and supports, the coaching that could help those teachers to support that, and enough of it, is lacking. So here's a story to illustrate. Imagine a family of four with a mom and a dad and a new baby. The baby recently contracted spinal meningitis. The family lives in a rural, remote area and needs to be taken to the hospital 2 hours away by plane, and they could not take their son. Several friends and neighbors pitch in to help care for the four-year-old, but unfortunately, there was no early childhood program in that community, and he had to go to several homes while he was away. His family was away for those 2 weeks. The new baby has recovered, but upon reunion with his family, the boy exhibited some acting out and emotional instability because he didn't know where his parents were and didn't why he couldn't go with them. As a child trauma specialist, Dr. Bruce Perry says, it's not the event that determines whether something is traumatic to someone, but the individual's experience of the event. Those parents continued to struggle to meet the needs of their child, and the family, unfortunately, did not have access to a qualified early childhood teacher or a program, nor one that had the specialized training to meet that family's need. That child is now six, and it is reported that he entered kindergarten and he struggled. The parents did everything they knew how to support him, but the sense of abandonment was perhaps too much. He is now in a special education class. If it was something else like an ear infection, the family would have gone to the primary health provider and prescribed medicine, more often than not a simple solution to the problem. But this was a social-emotional, or some say, behavior challenge. Help was not available, nor was there a skilled, attuned teacher to provide that simple remedy and help repair that reunification. Children in these learning environments are more likely to engage in that have access to those high-quality learning environments that Senator Begich is talking about and that have been existing so far. They have those nurturing, caring teachers. They're able to regulate their social-emotional development and help them read and help them do math and expand their vocabularies.
Ms. Johnson, your testimony is fabulous, and it's actually very fascinating to listen to. Unfortunately, we are up against the clock, and have another committee meeting. I'm wondering if you could provide your testimony in writing to us, and we'll get it out to all the members, and maybe you can even note when you send it to my office where you stopped off, so we'll know where to begin reading. We really appreciate your dedication to young children and the work that you do and the knowledge that you shared with us this morning. So with that, again, we are going to have a joint meeting on Monday with the House to hear from the Alaska Council on School Administrators, and that meeting will be at 8 o'clock on the first floor. And so with that, we will adjourn at 9:40.